Good morning, everyone. I call this meeting of the North Dakota Public Service Commission to order. I'm Randy Christman, Chairman of the Commission, joined by Commissioners Brian Krasius and Julie Fedorchak. So we have a quorum. It is 10:03 a.m. on Tuesday, May 15, 2018. And the only opening comments I have would be regarding the Energizing North Dakota's Future conference that was held over at EERC last week. I can't remember, this is probably about the third or fourth year, I think, of this conference going on, and I thought they've been really useful. We heard from Lieutenant Governor Brent Sanford from the Empower Commission and Majority Leader Rich Wardner from the Energy Development and Transmission Committee, and one of the discussions that I thought was particularly useful and was new to this meeting was Doug Goring, the Ag Commissioner, talking about the energy and agriculture synergies. And it is an important part to the energy piece, working together with agriculture in that way. So I thought that was pretty good. There was a good panel discussion on the bridging the gap between electric production, between basic coal and oil with CO2, using it as a resource. And then they had the Assistant Secretary for Fossil Energy from the U.S. Department of Energy, Steve Winberg. So I thought it was a good conference and pretty useful. Commissioner Krasius?
No, I would agree. Very good conference. I've been doing a lot of traveling mixed in with duties. I've been able to go out and speak to really some unique and different groups that all have different interests in that. That's always rewarding when you get into, especially when you get into the Q&A portion, you find out what they really want to talk about and what's really on their mind. But yesterday, speaking of getting out to the public, we went to Grassy Butte, North Dakota, and I would love to say something profound as far as it's the home of someone very famous. It could be. But that's not my area of expertise. And I was really hoping, Randy, that you would have something enlightening in that regard. But it's just getting out in front of the public, I would say, has been one of the most rewarding parts of this job. And you learn so much, and not always when you're speaking or during the hearing process, but just the one-on-ones that you get afterward, and you're talking to the public, the people that you serve, and you learn an incredible amount. You just gain a lot of different types of knowledge, and very rewarding and very beneficial as well, just to keep a pulse on what the public is looking for.
Commissioner Fedorchak?
Well, good morning, everyone. Just to follow up on Brian's comments about Grassy Butte, this is the more indication that the public is front and center in the Public Service Commission, and we do take that responsibility seriously of getting out and meeting with the public. And that hearing was interesting because it was a pretty full crowd, and it wasn't just people from the audience or from the company. It was a pretty full crowd of folks, and a lot of the people were there not because they had a problem with the pipeline, but they were just curious about this hearing. They're curious about what we do. They've heard about our processes and wanted to see it for themselves. And so that was, I really appreciated that they took the time to come out and listen to what we're doing. And the hearing itself went well. It was an interesting project, one of those projects where there's a little bit of new pipe being added or proposed to be added, and then they're converting a large stretch of 42 miles of existing pipeline, all for the transportation of NGLs and to, again, further develop the gas infrastructure in North Dakota so that this product that we're producing large volumes of is able to be captured, processed, and used both in North Dakota and throughout the United States. So we'll make a decision on that pipeline quickly so the company can know where they stand. And I don't envision any big problems with it. There was a really thorough record discussed and not a lot of concerns expressed from the public. So I think we should be able to reach a decision fairly quickly.
I know what you mean when you say that the public is front and center with us. but I would argue that the public is front but not center because service is our middle name.
Woo! That's a good one. You must be running for election.
Okay. Moving right along. We have three items on the consent calendar plus approval of minutes from previous meetings, and I move approval.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed? Motion is approved.
Before I start my portfolio, I would like to move RC7 to the end, if that's all right with everyone. Seeing no objection, we'll move RC7 to the end of my portfolio. Okay, RC1, I move the commission conditionally approve revision number 37 to surface coal mining permit NAFK-8405 held by Falkirk Mining Company to mine the federal and private coal located in the southeast quarter of Section 10 of the permit and to update other information, mining and reclamation plans in the permit.
Second.
On November 9th of 2017, Falkirk filed the application for revision number 37 to mine 160 acres of federal and private coal located in the southeast quarter of Section 10. The southeast quarter was previously incorporated into the permit with revision number 23 that was approved by the PSC on September 4th of 2007, so over a decade ago. Falkirk obtained a federal coal lease for the east half of Section 10 on January 1st of 2018. Several federal coal tracts were included in the original permit application and in the revision number 23 addition areas, but no mining of these tracts was proposed at the time. 50% of coal interest in the southeast quarter of Section 10 is owned by the federal government. The surface of the federal coal tract in the southeast quarter of 10 is privately owned. Again, the surface is privately owned, and Falkirk has secured the surface lease for that tract of land. Falkirk is requesting a variance from the contemporaneous reclamation requirements for two small areas within the southeast quarter of 10. The variance areas total about 15 acres in size and in part would ensure that sufficient material is available to backfill the final pit. In addition, Falkirk has requested a general variance from the rule that requires rough grading be completed within 180 days of coal removal. These requests have been adequately justified, and the Reclamation Division recommends that the variance be approved as allowed by state law. Leased federal coal cannot be mined until the Secretary of the Department of Interior approves the federal mine plan, in addition to the lease that was granted on January 1st. So special condition number one attached to this revision prohibits overburden and coal removal in this quarter of land until the mining plan is approved by the U.S. Department of Interior. We will be submitting the required federal lands decision documents to the Office of Surface Mining, providing them with the required information for the processing of the mine approval plan action. The approval is expected in the very near future. Revision 37 was deemed a significant revision and was subject to the public notice requirements. Falkirk submitted affidavits of publication of the required newspaper notices. We notified the appropriate agencies, the permit area landowners, and the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service of the application. We received no objections or requests for informal conferences on this application. Staff has determined that the existing performance bond in the amount of $88,700,000 is sufficient for the proposed operation, completed its review of the revision application, and recommends that it be conditionally approved.
We have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion?
I would just add that while the process has improved in terms of timing, there's still some streamlining and talking with some of the staff members that could certainly be done at the federal level to help move these things along a little bit faster. But hopefully they can get the proper permits, the approvals before we get toward fall or into fall, because I think that is when they would like to begin getting into that tract of land so we don't run into another situation. I saw a chunk of land, part of the BNI mine. There's some federal land when I was on a tour of that facility that they're actually going around that becomes incredibly costly and expensive to the company to have to move around and then go back, assuming at some point they get mine approval or approval to mine that parcel that's left behind. So good news in terms of things moving faster, in terms of the permitting process, but still some lingering issues that need to be solved.
Not to mention when they go around them, in many cases, there are some local individuals that own some of those mineral rights in addition to the federal government, and so they're deprived of their opportunity to sell the minerals.
I think this is another example of those significant changes in policy at the federal level brought about by President Trump. Clearly, these leases, there was no federal coal leases being approved for many years, and now while it can be streamlined further, we're seeing at least some movement on that and some direction, and I don't think you can overstate the importance and the significance of this change. We've been talking about this since I've been on the commission, the need to move these, get the federal government to make decisions on this type of property and to the challenges that it creates for mining around it. So this is a great news, and I'm pleased to see that there's more deliberate and sensible policy on energy development coming out of the White House.
That's a good point. And another thing that shouldn't go unnoticed here for people that are listening in, part of the role of bringing everything together is the state reclamation program. In our case, it's a state program. If not, it would be OSM. And then part of it gets up to the Department of Interior level. Fortunately, having a state program, the things that the reclamation program do, we're able to move quickly. If we didn't have a state program, the things that we do here would also move at a much slower pace. So it's good that we have that.
Is there any further discussion? Since none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Motion is approved.
Okay, moving to some AML motions. I move the commission execute a contract with BNC Concrete Pumping Incorporated in the amount of $1,545,750 for drilling and pressurized grouting for the 2018 Wilton Phase 4 Shell Lake and Williams County Road 9 Phase 6 AML projects.
Second.
In mid-February, the AML division issued an invitation for bid for the 2018. We consider it one project, but it's in three different locations. This project is for rotary drilling and pressurized grouting of underground mine workings that are located beneath public roads near Wilton, a farmstead near Partial, and an industrial development near Williston. The AML division estimates the project will require about 37,000 feet of rotary drilling, 6,000 feet of casing, and 7,000 cubic yards of grout to fill subsurface voids. Competitive sealed bidding procedures were used with notices issued to registered vendors through the State Procurement Office. The low bid was from BNC Concrete Pumping Incorporated of Williston for $1,545,750. The AML cost estimate for this project was $1,507,650. The notice of intent to award a contract to BNC Concrete Pumping was issued on April 10th. No protests were received. The signed contract has been returned, and we have also received performance and payment bonds, a certificate of liability insurance, and other materials that were requested. So staff recommends the commission execute the contract with BNC Concrete Pumping.
We have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion?
I think one of the, or maybe it's just the fact that the evolution of our mining industry continues to fascinate me. And we've talked about the room and pillar mining that was prevalent back in the 1920s, and then that slowly changed over to surface mining. But the reality is there are a lot of abandoned mines out there, and it seems like we don't know about it until there's a collapse of some sort, a sinkhole forms, that type of thing, and then remediation efforts follow after that. But I think it underscores that this is really an effective program. There are between 600 confirmed and more than likely over 1,000 abandoned mines in North Dakota, underground mines. So this program is very important in terms of public safety. A lot of times you don't know if a farmstead is on top of one of those old abandoned mines that can be anywhere from 40 to 100 feet down. It might be a roadway that the public's using. And I guess I haven't been around long enough to know if I would assume when it's, you know, high moisture type year, we might see more of them form and show, but it's a significant issue that I applaud the current operators, whether by choice or by mandate, but they contribute the 8 cents per ton, and this isn't something that they were responsible for, but it's something that they are taking the lead on and funding the remediation efforts, which I think is an incredibly important point and worth acknowledging.
Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed? Motion is approved.
RC3, I move the Commission execute a contract with GeoServe Incorporated in the amount of $51,200 for material testing and other services for the 2018 Wilton Phase 4, Shell Lake, and Williams County Road 9 Phase 6 material testing AML project.
Second.
So in mid-February, AML issued an invitation for bid for material testing and other services associated with the same three projects, or we look at them as one project again, as we just talked about in the previous motion. This was for testing the grout that's pumped into the mine voids and then other services associated with the drilling and grouting projects. In addition to the actual drilling and grouting contract for filling the underground mine voids, a separate contract is issued for testing the grout, including its strength and batch plan inspections. Competitive seal bidding procedures were used with notices issued to registered vendors through the State Procurement Office again. The low bid was from GeoServe Incorporated of Bismarck for $51,200. Our cost estimate was $62,450, so this one came in a little less than we estimated, the previous one a little bit more. The notice of intent to award a contract to GeoServe was issued on April 10th. No protests were received. The signed contract has been returned, and we have also received performance and payment bonds, a certificate of liability insurance, and other requested materials. So staff recommends the Commission execute the contract with GeoServe Incorporated.
We have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion? Sensing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Motion is approved.
RC4, I move the Commission execute a contract with Wilson Construction Incorporated in the amount of $252,400 for construction services at the 2018 Morton County AML project.
Second.
So now this, again, is AML, but this is a different project out north and west of New Salem. In early March, AML issued an invitation to bid on this project. It involves the elimination of approximately 2,850 feet of high walls at two abandoned surface mines in Morton County. About 120,000 cubic yards of spoil material will be used to backfill the high walls, and about 36 acres will be reclaimed at the two sites. Competitive seal bidding procedures were used with notices issued to registered vendors through the State Procurement Office again. The bid opening was held and 9 bids were received in this case. The low bid was received from Wilson Construction of Scranton, North Dakota, for $252,400. The other bids ranged from $252,485 to $395,600. The AML division's cost estimate for the project was $300,000, so in this case it's almost $50,000 less than estimated. But what I wanted to highlight with throwing out this list of numbers, so there's nine bids on this case, all of which were over $250,000, and the difference between the low bid and the second low bid was $85. The notice of intent to award a contract to Wilson Construction was issued on April 10th. No protests were received. The signed contract has been returned, and we have received performance and payment bonds, a certificate of liability insurance, and other requested materials. Staff recommends that the commission execute the contract with Wilson Construction Incorporated.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Motion is approved.
RC5, I move the commission submit the 2019 Administrative and Enforcement Grant application to the Office of Surface Mining Reclamation and Enforcement to request federal funds that are needed to carry out the coal regulatory program for the next one-year grant period that begins July 1st, 2018 and ends June 30, 2019.
Second.
The Office of Surface Mining recently announced the federal grant allocations for the states for the July 1st of 18 through June 30th, 19 period. OSM has allocated $994,638 for our coal regulatory program. This is the same amount as our current grant. The total amount of the grant application, including the state share, is $1,554,121. This includes both direct and indirect costs. Of this total, the federal share is $994,638. The state share is $559,483. The funding split will be 64% federal and 36% state based on OSM's federal lands funding formula. And that formula considers the federal coal acreage in existing permits and pending applications that will permit new acreage. The operating items proposed in the 2019 grant budget are about half the total operating funds that were budgeted for the Reclamation Division in our state 2017-19 biennium. So the approved 17-19 biennium indirect cost rate of 33.41% was used in the grant application. And I guess what I want to emphasize is our share on this will be pretty close to what was budgeted for, so we're on track on our biennium if next year's fiscal year for the feds ends up being similar to this again.
We have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion? Sensing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed? Motion is approved.
Okay, moving then into licensing. RC6, I move the commission adopt the order granting request to discontinue business in Ypsilanti Equity Elevator Company, license number 98, Ypsilanti, North Dakota, discontinue business, case number GE-18-150.
Second.
On May 3rd, we received a request to discontinue business from Ypsilanti Equity Elevator for their grain warehouse there. They ceased their grain purchasing and storing operations at the end of 2015, not a typo, 2.5 years ago. But they were required to maintain a license because they had some credit sale contracts out there. The final credit sale contract was settled in January of this year, so the warehouse is now empty. There are no unpaid scale tickets, outstanding storage obligations, or open contracts. The facility has now been leased by a farmer for private use, and staff recommends this request be approved.
We have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion? Sensing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed? Motion is approved.
Again, putting off RC7 for a moment. RC8, I move the commission adopt the order granting request to discontinue business in BTR Farmers Co-op license number 1325, Drake, North Dakota, discontinue business case number GE-18-152.
Second.
On April 27th, we received a request to discontinue business from BTR Farmers Co-op for the grain warehouse at Drake. Business is no longer conducted at this facility that has been being leased from Lone Prairie Grain. The warehouse is empty. There are no unpaid scale tickets, outstanding storage obligations, or open contracts. BTR Farmers Co-op continues to operate facilities at Leeds, Madoc, and Niles, North Dakota, with a combined capacity of 4,089,000 bushels. Staff recommends the request be approved.
We have a motion and a second. Are there further discussion? Sensing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Motion is approved.
RC9, I move the commission adopt the order granting request to discontinue business in Herald Terminal LLC, roving grain buyer, Herald, South Dakota, discontinue business case number GE-18-153.
Second.
On April 25th, we received a request to discontinue business from Herald Terminal LLC, which will no longer be operating as a roving grain buyer under North Dakota Roving Grain Buyer License number 3179. There are no unpaid scale tickets or open contracts, so staff recommends the request be approved. By the way, Herald's about 30 miles east of here.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Since none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Motion is approved.
And now jumping back to RC7, I move the commission adopt the order granting request to discontinue business in Hebron Farmers Elevator Company, license number 81, Hebron, North Dakota, discontinue business case number GE-18-151.
Second.
On May 3rd, we received a request to discontinue business from Hebron Farmers Elevator for that warehouse at Hebron. Business is no longer conducted at the facility. The warehouse is empty. There are no unpaid scale tickets, outstanding storage obligations, or open contracts. The facility was sold to a business for private use, so staff recommends the request be approved.
We have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion?
You know, because of our hearing yesterday and then some company last night, I didn't have time to make any calls or do any investigation on some of the small towns discussed today. But Hebron, being close to my home area, I know most people probably associate Hebron with Hebron Brick Company, established in 1904, and it has been a mainstay of North Dakota for over a century. But I would also point out, from Hebron, Jerome Mishy is a songwriter who has contributed to bands all the way from Three Dog Night to Britney Spears.
Wow.
From right there in Hebron, North Dakota. And from the TV show The Voice, Gwen Sebastian, who has made national fame for the last few years. Although, I'll give Hebron their due with Gwen Sebastian, but technically, she's from north of Hebron up in District 33.
Did she vote for you?
I hope so.
I think I just picked up on something. So a step closer to unraveling the mystery of where does Randy get his information. You indicated a call. You did not have time to make a call, so that tells me a little bit you're going to an individual.
Individuals. my spider web-like network.
Informants.
Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed? Motion is approved.
That concludes my portfolio. Commissioner Fedorchak.
Okay. I move we adopt the order denying a request for amendment to the Commission's May 10th, 2017 order on continuing suitability in Meadowlark Wind 1, LLC, New Frontier Wind Energy Project, McHenry County, citing application case number PU-11-69.
Second.
So on April 25th of 2012, the commission issued a certificate of site compatibility to Meadowlark Wind 1 for the New Frontier Wind Project in McHenry County. On May 10th of this 2017, the commission issued an order of continuing suitability for certificate number 29 because those that certificate had expired. On March 29th of 2018, so this last March, the commission held an informal hearing to discuss Meadowlark's planned access road construction methodology in relation to the topsoil segregation requirement in the certification provision number 15 attached to our May 10th of 2017 order. On April 2nd, Meadowlark filed a request to amend the certification provision number 15 of that order. On May 5th, we had issued a notice of opportunity for a hearing regarding this request. One written comment was received. On April 25th, a second informal hearing was held. And on May 3rd of 2018, Derek Broughton of the Broughton Law Firm filed written comments in response to the commission's notice of opportunity for hearing. So essentially, in April, Meadowlark requested that with respect to the access roads, it allowed to be removed less than the 12 inches that's required in our certification document, 12 inches of topsoil. We require that they remove 12 inches of topsoil, segregate that from the subsoil, and then save that topsoil or be prepared to use it for reclamation down the road. The company had a construction technique for the roads that they were planning on that would allow them or require them to remove up to 6 inches of the topsoil and then fill it, put over that remaining topsoil a cement mixture that would help stabilize the road and then build the road on top of that. So basically they would be putting this 6%, it's called a cement stabilization procedure to blend a 6% by weight mixture of Portland cement into the soil to form a stabilized subgrade for which the road can be installed on top. There was representatives from McKenzie and McHenry Soil Conservation Districts that supported this procedure, and Meadowlark also referenced the in North Dakota Department of Transportation standards specifications for road and bridge construction, which specifies to remove topsoil to its full depth or up to 6 inches, whichever is less, for the purpose of road construction. So we took that information in. We also received information from our Reclamation Division on their, with their expertise, some of our soil scientists, on the whole concept of blending the cement stabilization mixture into topsoil. And they provided input into the record that said that the topsoil, this cement stabilization mixture blending into the topsoil would not be acceptable for coal mining and reclamation in North Dakota. And they did not think it would be an appropriate thing to be doing for this either, that this cement substrate material would not dissolve or otherwise disappear in the short form as the company was suggesting would happen. Derek Broughton of the Broughton Law Firm also filed comments. He retained Western Plains Consulting to review Meadowlark's proposal, and Western Plains Consulting pointed out that none of the soils in the project area are deficient in calcium and would not benefit from more calcium being added, which is the primary component of the cement mixture that they were adding to the topsoil. They concluded that Meadowlark's proposal was unacceptable and recommended that Meadowlark's proposal be rejected. So in this order, the commission finds the DOT specifications are not applicable to wind project turbine access roads that must be reclaimed when the project has reached the end of its useful life. Further, the commission believes removing and storing the topsoil up to 12 inches or to the depth of cultivation, whichever is greater, better facilitates reclamation of the access roads and productivity of the soil afterwards. So we did a fair amount of research on this and had a lot of discussion and considered this company's request. And based on what we have and know so far, it seemed that our original requirement of segregating up to 12 inches of the topsoil and subsoil provides for the best, safest reclamation possible, assuming that these roads are different than other roads that are constructed that may have an indefinite life. We anticipate that these roads will actually be reclaimed someday and taken out, and this order provides that the topsoil and subsoil, full amount of topsoil and subsoil, be segregated to allow for the best possible reclamation based on the information we have today.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion?
When the company, it was well within their right to make the request, but I'll be honest, I was less than excited about this particular request, because when you think about what's the greatest commodity we have in this state outside of the people, you could argue it's topsoil. It takes 100 to up to 500 years for 1 inch of topsoil to form. And to not remove down to a depth of up to 12 inches, and to leave some of that topsoil that then would become mixed with the concrete would be problematic, perhaps not for the current generation, but certainly problematic for future generations of landowners. And I think it's only fair that all industry in North Dakota is held to the same consistent standard. And as mentioned, we required of the lignite industry and others as well. So there's simply no replacement for the topsoil. And I think this is reasonable that they follow the standards that we've put forth. And you could argue that in North Dakota we expect more in terms of how industry operates and what we request and ask for them. But we certainly don't want to be in a situation where we get down the road and then we're looking at a program similar to what we're doing now with AML to go back and try and reclaim and undo things that have happened many years prior generations before, and we don't want to repeat history in that sense. So, I think it's something, as I mentioned, I wasn't excited about, and certainly support that they follow the original request.
Is there any further discussion?
I will just add that, and especially for me, being from that area and seeing the successes of our mine reclamation program in the past decades, when I'm just so proud of our predecessors that when science, technology, and earth-moving equipment made it possible, we adopted these high standards of reclamation and now return that soil actually in North Dakota beyond what the federal requirements are to 100% of its pre-mining productivity instead of the 90% federal requirement. And among many things that I think make that possible, one of the key elements is segregation and storage of topsoil. And in the case of the mines, they even have to segregate the subsoil from the overburden and maintain that separately. So actually, you know, they're under additional requirements beyond what we even require for the competitive wind energy industry. And so I think holding on to what we have required to at least segregate up to a foot of topsoil is very reasonable, and I'm certainly going to vote for this motion to deny the request.
Is there any further discussion? Since you're none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed? Motion is approved.
Okay. My second and final motion, I move the commission adopt the first amended findings of fact, conclusions of law and order in One Oak Rockies Midstream LLC, Demicks Lake Gas Processing Plant, McKenzie County Siting Application, case number PU-14-764.
Second.
In October of 2014, One Oak Rockies Midstream filed an application for a certificate of site compatibility for this Demicks Lake Gas Processing Plant to be located approximately 13.5 miles northeast of Wofford City in McKenzie County. The project will process up to 400 million standard cubic feet of gas per day. And we approved that project in January of 2016. It seems like it's a year off, but anyway, that's what the record here in my front of me says. March of this year, the company informed the commission of its plans to modify this energy conversion facility. It has not been constructed yet. One Oak states that the project continues to be located on the designated 160-acre site, and the plant still consists of two cryogenic turbo expander processing units, with each unit capable of processing 200 million standard cubic feet per day of wellhead gas. But One Oak wants to rearrange the plant design and add thermal oxidizers, which reduce the pollution, add an amine gas treating system, and remove storage tanks, and include a natural gas liquids tie-in to accommodate direct transfer of NGLs to an NGL pipeline. And they requested approval for these modifications. They also filed a request to amend the commission's order to modify paragraph 30 of the certification relating to order provisions that was incorporated by reference into our original order, and that this change would provide the commission flexibility to approve facility modifications without requiring a notice and opportunity for hearing be issued in instance where notice is not otherwise required by rule or statute. So this basically brings this previously issued order up to current status with the changes that the legislature has made with the footprint and reprint laws allowing companies to make modifications on previously cited areas. So on April 5th, the commission, we issued a notice of opportunity for a hearing. We received no request for a hearing. On April 19th, the North Dakota Department of Health filed comments with the commission. And so today, basically, our order would make these two changes. It would adopt the new certification language, allowing the company to make minor changes within that cited footprint without having to have a notice of opportunity for a hearing. And it would approve the modifications to the site plan that they have requested. And again, those are to eliminate the on-storage tanks, which and do a tie-in to an NGL pipeline. So they originally envisioned transporting the NGLs by truck, and this now they prefer to transport them by pipeline. This would facilitate that. It would add the amine gas treating system to allow for the processing of sour gas in order to make the natural gas suitable for pipeline transport. So that's another improvement into the facility. And add thermal oxidizers to the project for air pollution control, another improvement to the facility. These modifications will not affect the project's capacity. It'll remain at 400 MCF. It does also, though, despite the changes, they've changed contractors, and they're now estimating the total cost of construction to be $475 million as compared to $624 million, which was the original price tag back when this project was approved several years ago. In terms of when they anticipate completing these projects, they anticipate having the first train operational by the fourth quarter of 2019, and the second train operational 15 months later, so that would be late 2020 or early 2021. And again, for the total cost of $475 million.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion?
It seems like when I've been out, and I referenced earlier at the beginning of the meeting, being able to get out in the public, and natural gas infrastructure development continues to dominate the bulk of that conversation. It's certainly not everything that we're doing, but it's being driven by just a number of different factors. I think you could start with producers have to reduce flaring, but then you also have to have export markets for product moving not just within the United States, but actually moving outside of the United States. The Gulf Coast continues to see more facilities, export facility build out. So that's helping pipelines. And yesterday at the hearing, it just really struck me when we were talking about during the course of that conversation at the hearing, the Endeavor pipeline and how that's connected into the Wild Basin gas plant. And to move product from the Wild Basin gas plant and then ultimately and eventually to market. So just a lot of really good things that are happening out in the western part of the state to help knock down the flaring percentages, but also creating new value-added opportunities is really, really important for the North Dakota economy and stability of the Bakken region itself, so it not only not just hinges on the number of drilling rigs, but the value-added components and infrastructure development that helps sustain that play over the long haul.
I also find it interesting how in just over 5 years our conversations have evolved. As I recall, the first probably half of my time here, we mostly talked, when we talked about oil and gas infrastructure, about oil infrastructure, and occasionally there was something about gas. Now we talk, it seems like, mostly about gas processing or the processed liquids, and occasionally something about the actual oil product itself. So it's kind of an evolution. Is got took care of the first thing first, and now taking care of the gas part of it. So,
is there any further discussion? Since you're not all those in favor, signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed? Motion is approved.
That concludes my portfolio.
Okay. Regarding announcements, there are not a lot. Okay, here we go. Just want to point out, like today, our next regularly scheduled meeting is on May 29th at 10 o'clock, the regular time, but like today, that's a Tuesday again. So May 29th, the next regular commission meeting. And then after that, the reason why we moved that one up to Tuesday, on Wednesday the 30th, followed by Thursday and Friday the 31st and 1st, we have scheduled formal hearings for MDU's natural gas service rate increase, case number PU-17-295. Again, that's May 30th, 31st, and June 1st, each day at 8:30, right here in the commission hearing room. That concludes the announcements. We will stand in recess for some questions from the press, after which we will adjourn and then reconvene a few minutes later for the administrative portion of our meeting.
The pipeline to Demix is that MDU who's building that one? Or?
There actually is not. Do you mean the NGL?
Yeah.
That one, there isn't a pipeline to serve that yet. That's being developed, and we anticipate that maybe later on this summer we might get an application from the company for that. But I believe One Oak is looking at building another pipeline kind of parallel to the existing Garden Creek NGL line.
Since we're on the subject of natural gas, MDU talked about their Valley Expansion Project and also the project to bring gas to Gwinner, being both projects going to be in probably online by the end of this calendar year. And I know you've been very interested as a commission in bringing natural gas to areas that are not served. Do you see this trend continuing?
I hope so. I think it's great that MDU is tackling that and making those investments in that natural gas infrastructure. It's costly to build these new natural gas pipelines, and it requires a baseload of customers to help support those. And so, you know, it isn't easy to get that infrastructure out to rural areas because the population base to justify the cost, often that formula doesn't wash out. But these two projects in the eastern part of the state are significant for those areas. There are communities that don't have natural gas out there that can be served, likely served by these projects for sure. The Gwinner project is bringing to that facility and that region. And so that one is a huge and very important for that manufacturing facility and its long-term economics in North Dakota. But also the other project that MDU has that's bringing in additional gas, it has two benefits. One, it adds additional gas to the supply in that southeast corner, which was constricted. And we know that areas like Wahpeton have struggled to bring on new manufacturing, new industrial projects because of the lack of natural gas availability. So this will help ease that. It also provides some redundancy into the system, which helps with reliability. If there's a break in a pipe someplace along the way, this gives another route, another supply line to feed the system. And so that's another added benefit that helps support customers beyond those that would be served directly by the new pipeline. So I think it's great, and I hope that these continue as we see the development of the natural gas industry in North Dakota and the development of pipelines to transport that natural gas. I think we can always be hopeful that some of those new pipelines will go by communities that are not served and provide new opportunities for getting natural gas to some of those unserved communities.
Do you experience any communities contacting the commission after MDU announced these two projects? Where other communities are saying, we should do that?
I've, just a little different twist on all of that. For one, to answer the first part of the question, I absolutely think we'll continue to see more areas provided natural gas service simply because of the price point of natural gas compared to propane. But there is actually up in the Devil's Lake region right now, and while Devil's Lake itself has natural gas, as you have urban sprawl, if you will, and more development beyond the city boundaries, those customers, households, and also businesses, they want natural gas service as well. And right now there is an example of that. I've been working with several potential commercial customers, and then the residential customers would benefit as well if that line is extended to the east of Devil's Lake. So they see the price point difference between propane and natural gas, and no question in my mind that they'll continue to pursue that. It'll be interesting to see if the balance changes between fractionating our natural gas, our wellhead natural gas in North Dakota, and how does that change the supply and demand dynamics up in our part of the world? I think that will be really interesting to follow, but the reality is we have an overabundance of natural gas right now, and it should continue to be significantly more cost-effective for the foreseeable future than propane.
Not to disagree with anything that's been said, I'm not going to repeat it all either, of course, but just the abundance of the gas as we go, the ability to process it, fractionate the liquids, it really is going to mean better availability of both natural gas and propane. So in the areas where it doesn't come together to add natural gas, it should also either drive down costs or limit increases in propane prices too. So just this production is likely to, over the years, benefit everybody regardless which form they're using.
Back to your last question on, did we get asked by any communities expressing interest in the MDU line? There were some individuals that contacted us. Stacy and I could probably dig back when those lines were first addressed, but I have not received any requests from communities specifically on that new MDU line.
I think that's all I've got.
Okay.
I was going to ask what goes into the grout that goes into a mine, but...
Bill Dodd can tell you all about that.
The grout? Was that the question?
Yeah.
Speak louder. I didn't
No, what goes into the grout that goes into an abandoned mine?
The grout.
What is in the grout?
What's the grout made of?
Oh, yes. It's made out of Portland cement, fly ash, sand, water, and an admixture called superplasticizer that makes it more flowable. It's really much like a concrete. It's just weaker.
Makes it more what, Bill? Flowable?
More flowable, yeah.
Oh, flowable, okay.
Yeah, plastic.
I see.
So there was no truth to the rumor that you use expired spam.
Not as far as I know.
Scary. Thanks, Dave.
Thank you. Okay, we'll reconvene in about 5 minutes for the administrative portion of the meeting.
It could be strong.